Penguin Random House Audio presents Dataclysm, Who We Are When We Think No One's Looking, by Christian Rutter. Read for you by Kaleo Griffith. Introduction. You have by now heard a lot about big data, the vast potential, the ominous consequences, the paradigm-destroying new paradigm it portends for mankind and his ever-loving websites. The mind reels as if struck by a very dull object. So I don't come here with more hype or reportage on the data phenomenon. I come with the thing itself, the data. Phenomenon stripped away. I come with a large store of the actual information that's being collected, which luck, work, wheedling, and more luck have put me in the unique position to possess and analyze. I was one of the founders of OKCupid, a dating website that, over a very unbubbly long haul of 10 years, has become one of the largest in the world. I started it with 3 friends. We were all mathematically minded, and the site succeeded in large part because we applied that mindset to dating. We brought some analysis and rigor to what had historically been in the domain of love experts and grinning warlocks like Dr. Phil. How the site works isn't all that sophisticated. It turns out the only math you need to model the process of 2 people getting to know each other is some sober arithmetic. But for whatever reason, our approach resonated, and this year alone, 10 million people will use the site to find someone. As I know too well, websites and founders of websites love to throw out big numbers, and most thinking people have no doubt learned to ignore them. You hear millions of this and billions of that, and know it's basically, hooray for me, said with trailing zeros. Unlike Google, Facebook, Twitter, and the other sources whose data will figure prominently in this book, OKCupid is far from a household name. If you and your friends have all been happily married for years, you've probably never heard of us. So, I've thought a lot about how to describe the reach of the site to someone who's never used it, and who rightly doesn't care about the user engagement metrics of some guy's startup. I'll put it in personal terms instead. Tonight, some 30,000 couples will have their first date because of OKCupid. Roughly 3,000 of them will end up together long-term. 200 of those will get married, and many of them, of course, will have kids. There are children alive and pouting today, grouchy little humans refusing to put their shoes on right now, who would never have existed but for the whims of our HTML. I have no smug idea that we've perfected anything, and it's worth saying here that while I'm proud of the site my friends and I started, I honestly don't care if you're a member or go create an account or what. I've never been on an online date in my life, and neither have any of the other founders, and if it's not for you, believe me, I get that. Tech evangelism is one of my least favorite things, and I'm not here to trade my blinking digital beads for anyone's precious island. I still subscribe to magazines, I get the Times on the weekend, tweeting embarrasses me, I can't convince you to use, respect, or believe in the internet or social media any more than you already do, or don't. By all means, keep right on thinking what you've been thinking about the online universe. But if there's one thing I sincerely hope this book might get you to reconsider, it's what you think about yourself. Because that's what this book is really about. OKCupid is just how I arrived at the story. I have led OKCupid's analytics team since 2009, and my job is to make sense of the data our users create. While my 3 founding partners have done almost all the hard work of actually building the site, I've spent years just playing with the numbers. Some of what I work on helps us run the business. For example, understanding how men and women view sex and beauty differently is essential for a dating site. But a lot of my results aren't directly useful, just interesting. There's not much you can do with the fact that, statistically, the least black band on Earth is Belle and Sebastian, or that the flash in a snapshot makes a person look 7 years older, except to say, huh, and maybe repeat it at a dinner party. That's basically all we did with this stuff for a while. The insights we gleaned went no further than an occasional lame press release. But eventually, We were analyzing enough information that larger trends became apparent, big patterns in the small ones. And even better, I realized, I could use the data to examine taboos like race by direct inspection. That is, instead of asking people survey questions or contriving small-scale experiments, which was how social science was often done in the past, I could go and look at what actually happens when, say, 100,000 white men and 100,000 black women interact in private. The data was sitting right there on our servers. It was an irresistible sociological opportunity. I dug in, and as discoveries built up, like anyone with more ideas than audience, I started a blog to share them with the world. That blog then became this book, after one important improvement. For Dataclysm, I've gone far beyond OkCupid. In fact, I've probably put together a data set of person-to-person interaction that's deeper and more varied than anything held by any other private individual, spanning most, if not all, of the significant online data sources of our time. In these pages, I'll use my data to speak not just to the habits of one site's users, but also to a set of universals. The public discussion of data has focused primarily on two things: government spying and commercial opportunity. About the first, I doubt I know any more than you, only what I've read. To my knowledge, the national security apparatus has never approached any dating site for access, and unless they plan to criminalize the faceless display of utterly ripped abs or young women from Brooklyn going on and on about how much they like scotch, when, come on, you know they really don't, I can't imagine they'd find much of interest. About the second story, data as dollars, I know better. As I was beginning this book, the tech press was slick with drool over the Facebook IPO. They'd collected everyone's personal data and had been turning it into all this money, and now they were about to turn that money into even more money in the public markets. A Times headline from 3 days before the offering says it all. Facebook must spin data into gold. You half expected Rumpelstiltskin to show up on the op-ed page and be like, "Yes, America, this is a solid buy." As a founder of an ad-supported site, I can confirm that data is useful for selling. Each page of a website can absorb a user's entire experience. Everything he clicks, whatever he types, even how long he lingers, and from this it's not hard to form a clear picture of his appetites and how to sate them. But awesome though the power may be, I'm not here to go over our nation's occult mission to sell body spray to people who update their friends about body spray. Given the same access to the data, I'm going to put that user experience, the clicks, keystrokes, and milliseconds, to another end. If big data's two running stories have been surveillance and money, for the last 3 years, I've been working on a third: the human story. Facebook might know that you're one of Eminem's many fans and send you offers accordingly. They also know when you break up with your boyfriend, move to Texas, begin appearing in lots of pictures with your ex, and start dating him again. Google knows when you're looking for a new car and can show the make and model preselected for just your psychographic. A thrill-seeking, socially conscious Type B male 25 to 34? Here's your Subaru. At the same time, Google also knows if you're gay, or angry, or lonely, or racist, or worried that your mom has cancer. Twitter, Reddit, Tumblr, Instagram, all these companies are businesses first. But as a close second, they're demographers of unprecedented reach, thoroughness, and importance. Practically as an accident, digital data can now show us how we fight, how we love, how we age, who we are, and how we're changing. All we have to do is look. From just a very slight remove, the data reveals how people behave when they think no one is watching. Here I will show you what I've seen. Also, fuck body spray. If you read a lot of popular nonfiction, there are a couple of things in Dataclysm that you might find unusual. One is that the book deals in aggregates and big numbers, and that makes for a curious absence in a story supposedly about people. There are very few individuals here. graphs and charts and tables.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?